Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all here this weekend. Happy to be here, as always. And happy to be here courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. You can find out more about them at mainstreetradionetwork.com. You can also find out about the Silk or Joe Show at mainstreetradionetwork.com and find podcasts for the show up there as well. And you know what? The Alan Nathan Show is up there. Once in a while, I guest host for him. So you can go check that out and see what his show is about and hear me on occasion. You can find us on social media, too, where you can find out if I hosted for him or not. Main Street Radio Network's pages are a good place to check for that information. Facebook and Wimpkin at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, and also X at Alan Nathan. Well, we also have on our own page, GetterGETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show. I don't know, might drop that all together. Getter is not a growing platform, really. It's kind of dead in the water from what I've heard. That means that you all actually should get some engagement going. Go on there and help them out so that our lowly social media page has an audience, has a platform. And I will actually have a reason to remember to post weekly when I host the show and post whenever I host for Alan Nathan, as opposed to just doing it when I remember it and when I feel like it, which is very irregular and not particularly often. So yes, give us a reason to use our social media pages and give a boost to those social media sites like Getter, GETTR.com. Anyway, we also, you know what, Alan Nathan Show has his own website too, alannathan.com. Give some hits on that web counter. All right, now to get to the meat of the show, of the segment here. Already so far in, so shortly in, that we can get to this. But in Virginia right now, there is a race going on. There's several races going on. The government's changing over this year, this election cycle. Always happens right at the year after the presidential race. The state of Virginia undergoes a shift in whatever political leaning it's going to be. You have the state delegates, or the state legislature up for grabs, the governorship up for grabs, state attorney general up for grabs. And, I don't know about that attorney general's race in Virginia. First of all, even before the Democrat attorney general candidate, it was found out that what I'm about to get to was found out, they were running ads saying he would fix the economy. What the hell? How? I am stunned by the logic in expecting the attorney general to fix the economy. And keep in mind, the attorney general is separate, is not appointed by the state governor. The attorney general is running to be elected. So let's say this Democrat attorney general is elected and everyone else is controlled by Republicans. What is he going to do to fix the economy? What could he possibly do? Their main drive is that somehow Trump is bankrupting the nation or whatever with the tariffs that are reaping huge profits and the very high employment figures and lower inflation than we had under Biden. So are they going to say that, like, they're going to pass a law, they're going to use the attorney general's office to prosecute people who profit from that? I don't understand exactly where attorney general comes in. Like, are they going to sue the Trump administration on behalf of all those benefiting? Who knows? Anyway, but the attorney general, though, that they have, he's turned out to be a real lemon. And I've read that the Democrat Party in Virginia is kind of angered at the dude because there's something that he probably should have disclosed that he did. And that is, he sent some very horrifying texts, the last kind of text that you want to see from someone who's coming in as the attorney general. So a few years ago, 2022... 3 years ago, so you can't say, oh, he's reformed or whatever. He came out and said that he wanted to see the then Republican state speaker of the House killed. And he wanted to do it himself. He wanted to put bullets in the guy's head, as he said in these text messages, which he accidentally sent to a Republican colleague. Furthermore, he just doubled down on them and said that, not just doubled down, but shortly after sending those, he doubled down on them and said that he hopes that the widow gets her children killed by gun violence so that she can feel the pain of all these other people or whatever and vote for and will demand gun control. That's where this guy stands. So you can imagine what kind of prosecutorial record he might have as Attorney General, where he wants people to die in order to advance his liberal agenda, much like the Louisville, Kentucky mass shooter that I've talked about before, who walked into a bank and shot a bunch of people just so that he could advance the liberals' gun control agenda. And here you have the Attorney General candidate from the Democrat Party who thinks the same way. And not only that, but the governor candidate, the Democrat governor candidate, she hasn't really denounced this. She just came kind of some wishy-washy statement. Let him do what he wants, blah, blah, blah. It's not my campaign. You know, something to that effect. But she is quoted as saying, "Let your rage fuel you." So certainly that is what this Attorney General candidate did. And now this guy did come out after the texts were leaked. Not before. After the texts were leaked. He finally came out and says, "Oh, I apologize for it." And liberals are saying this Attorney General candidate who fantasized about murdering a Republican and wanted to see his kids murdered just so he could see the wife cry, they say that he's taken responsibility for his remarks. He didn't. All he did was say they were disgusting. These weren't remarks he made 20 years ago as a teen or a young adult. These were comments he made 3 years ago. And taking responsibility apparently just means lying about being disgusted by them. He hasn't even explained what about him has changed in the last 3 years that he suddenly feels remorse for saying these things. And I don't think he or the Democrats really want to, because latest polling on how violent Democrats are shows that if anything, he should stand by his comments to win them. Not a single Democrat in the state of Virginia has called for him to do more than apologize, than say that, I'm disgusted by them. like it's weird too, the not apology he gave, they made it sound like that he wasn't even the one that said them, like it was his kid or something. "Oh, I'm disgusted by what I read." You're the one who typed it. And it was only 3 years ago, so it's not like you can say, "Oh, I was just a kid at the time." No, you typed that 3 years ago. You were the same adult you are right now. What? And now you're saying, "Oh, I'm disgusted by it," like it was written by some alien or something. What the heck? And the Democrats have been very rather silent, at least the state-level Democrats. I mean, MSNBC, Joe Scarborough, he said that this Attorney General candidate, Jay Jones, should step out of the race now after these. But as far as the rest of the party goes, they're pretty quiet about it. And ironically enough, all these anti-gun groups that endorsed him, all these people allegedly against gun violence that endorsed him, they hadn't taken down their endorsements except for one, the Brady campaign. And even at that, they didn't make an announcement distancing themselves from him. They just quietly took down a press release favoring him. And they donated $1,000 to his campaign. So I guess it's, you know, microscopic compared to what some of these other people have donated. But still, they didn't really come out publicly against him. They just quietly took down anything they had supporting him. And that was it. So it's like, on the one hand, they're trying to do a little distance perhaps to prevent themselves from being declared hypocrites, but on the other hand, they clearly still want him to win and would not be bothered at all by someone who is advocating gun violence against political opponents winning an election. This anti-gun group is a-okay with gun violence, as are the rest of them that are still happily endorsing him. And you know, they say even what he did with that weak "I was disgusted by the remark" was more than enough. He shouldn't even have had to defend himself, in fact. That's another thing that's being said. Oh, these texts, he shouldn't have been able to defend himself from them. They're fine. Nothing there to see there. I mean, we're talking about several hundred endorsements that he's had from Democrat congressmen and senators at the federal level on down to state delegates and city councilmen. All sorts of law enforcement, too. Teachers unions as well. And doctors. All of them are fine with wanting to murder a Republican and wanting to watch a Republican's wife cry because her children were murdered. Not a single Democrat has a problem with that, and I ask why not. We can deduce from polling that a majority of them feel this way too. Oh, and they're going to ban Republicans from having guns when they get into power. Isn't that great? Their Attorney General candidate, that's why he's backed by all these anti-gun groups, their Attorney General candidate fantasized about shooting a Republican and wanted his kids to die, and now he's conveniently going to be enforcing gun bans when he gets into office, and look at all of these law enforcement folks who endorse this murderer. Well, not murderer, this guy who glorified violence. Bans pushed through by the Democrat legislature that endorsed this candidate's views on murdering Republicans. Now, see, this is why I have huge credit card debt, because now I've got to buy some protection from these murderous nutcases before they ban Republicans from protecting themselves. Certainly, I can't rely on police. Look at all the officers that support murdering Republicans by endorsing this guy as the Attorney General. It'll be just like in Chicago, where when federal law enforcement was being shot at by a Democrat and called for help, the Democrats refused to send police to help. Why would they? It was a fellow Democrat attacking them, and certainly they don't want to get in the way of a Democrat executing the party's platform. Anyone remember last year when FEMA personnel were told not to help Trump supporters after a major hurricane? That's the kind of people we're dealing with here. If we die, they don't care. If we live, we'll be prosecuted for it. The best the unrepentant Democrats can do is say Trump ordered Jan 6 to happen before all violence by Democrats is justified. That's it. Even though they've been violent long before that, and against the government long before that. More Silk or Joe Show after this break.
For sports fans, one tradition defines game day more than any other, and that's tailgating. Celebrity chef Jamie Gwen has more.
Tailgating is more than setting up a grill. It's part of the game day tradition. When it comes to the menu, beef burgers top the list, with nearly 3 out of 4 fans calling them a must-have. Beef chili and tacos are also fan favorites. They can be made ahead and kept warm, so they're ready whenever the crowd gets hungry.
Chef Jamie says planning ahead helps keep the focus on food, fun, and football.
I always suggest mixing up classic tailgate fare with a few showstoppers. Burgers are a fan favorite for good reason, but you can add something unexpected like smoked brisket sliders or a cheeseburger dip with chips. Grilled steak flatbreads or bite-sized taco beef tarts are also easy to prep and make the menu feel a little more special without adding extra stress.
For more recipes and ideas, visit beefitswhatsfordinner.com, funded by the Beef Checkoff. SUVs are, without question, the most popular vehicle choice in the United States. But with so many models available, it can be difficult to know which one would be best for you. Kia America's James Bell has more.
People often think SUVs and crossovers are the same, but they're not. Traditional SUVs are built on truck platforms and are designed for towing and more off-roading exercises. Crossovers, on the other hand, share more with cars, which means better fuel economy and a smoother ride. The decision really comes down to the lifestyle and how you plan to use your next vehicle.
What might surprise you is that SUVs are not limited to gas engines. Hybrid and plug-in hybrid options are widely available. The Kia Sportage, for example, comes in gas, hybrid, and plug-in hybrid, giving drivers great choices for how they plan to travel.
There's no one-size-fits-all SUV, but almost all are built for adventure. And the trick is finding the one that amplifies your lifestyle and your passengers.
To learn more about the latest SUVs and crossovers, visit Kia.com.
I first want to underscore that Hispanics may be getting the disease younger and may be more at risk, so it's important to be aware of this. Having a history of a Parkinson's in the family, but having chronic constipation, whether in yourself or in your family, also chronic depression yourself or a family, then having smell loss, and also having a long standard, what we call REM sleep behavior. That is when you act out in your dreams, you act out in your sleep, you talk in your sleep, you may sleepwalk. All these are apparently risk factors that contribute to perhaps having a greater incidence or chance of developing Parkinson's. You can go to the michaeljfox.org/PPMI to find out more so that we can make bigger strides. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
We'll be right back.
Excuse me. Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show. I should say, co-host Joe here, filling in. Wait, I was about to say filling in for Alan while he's on assignment. I'm not filling in for Alan. This is my show. My brain got a little distracted. I had to send a text right as the segment was beginning. Anyway, while we wait for our guest, I'm just going to talk a little about this government shutdown. We do have the guest, actually, so I'm going to have to, I just have to go right into it, because we are talking with him about the government shutdown, particularly how it leaves the U.S. possibly vulnerable to cyber attacks. No kidding, without anyone in the government watching, or, you know, with the employees panicking more about their paycheck than cyber attacks, we might have an issue here. Joining us now to talk about this, we have Chris Orr. He is a seasoned entrepreneur with a career spanning tech, satellite communications, and emerging technologies in England and America. He is a disaster response and telecom national security spokesman for SAT-123. Chris Orr, happy on the show. How are you today? Happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. So that's one consequence we don't really think. We just assume that the government employees are continuing about their business, maybe until they get laid off, but at the very least not receiving paychecks. So how's this shutdown leaving our cyber attack or cybersecurity vulnerable?
Well, CISA, which is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, is really the front line on defending the U.S. and U.S. companies from cyber attacks. Employs around 2,500 people, but right now most of those have been furloughed. So really the front lines of our defense against cyber warfare are offline, essentially.
I mean, by the, even since you're watched by the shutdown fights, they happen every October. So at this point, I mean, when a cyber terrorist just is playing the long game, they could really just take advantage of any shutdown they care to. I mean, we almost had one, 2 years ago? And we definitely had one under Trump's first term. We had two of them under Trump's first term. And we had a big one under Obama 12 years ago. And so it seems like you can just, they're pretty regular occurrences. If you're a dedicated adversary to the U.S., all you got to do is wait for us to sabotage ourselves.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, look, these guys are paying attention to what we're doing here to U.S. politics. And when they see an event like this, you immediately see an increase in scanning activity and phishing activity and everything else. You know, the top cyber crimes that we face today in America are, of course, ransomware is the number one, where companies' data is seized and taken over, and then a ransom is demanded to restore it. But that's really a double whammy, because there's also a threat to release the data to the public if a ransom isn't paid. So things like that, things like denial of service attacks, phishing attacks, all definitely increase when there is less frontline defense.
And at that point, I guess it's up to private companies really to secure themselves. And I mean, are they really doing that good of a job given the preponderance of ransomware and all that and the cyber attacks going on?
Well, you know, it's like they do the best that they can, but they certainly, there is a reliance on CISA for, you know, sharing activity. And this is the number one thing it does. It's telling us when certain types of routers or networks are being attacked, certain types of software are under threat. You know, it's putting that information out to all of these companies so that they can respond. The other thing that happened was the first day of October also saw the expiration of the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act, which enabled private companies to share data about attacks that were happening to them with the government without fear of liability. And since that expired, those companies are less likely and willing to share that information. So right now, we really have a double threat going on.
Maybe a triple threat, too, because in, 2 days, that's at some date this month where you're supposed to upgrade to Windows 11, and Windows will stop security updates for Windows 10. And I got to imagine there's a lot of people out there who have sensitive information on their computers, or computers with access to sensitive information, who aren't going to be getting security updates while still logged in on Windows 10. And if the government is still shut down during that, that is a very good time for to exploit some vulnerabilities.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, it's like, I think that what we need to do is make sure that whether or not the government is shut down, that CISA continues to operate in some meaningful kind of way. Because look, look what happened in Spain just a few months back. The entire country was taken offline for over 24 hours. They included banking, electricity, phones, communications, and so on. And whilst the Spanish said that this was just a little problem with overload on one on one power line. To me, that looked like very much had all the hallmarks of a cyber attack. And if it could take down a whole country in Europe, it can certainly happen here.
Yeah, that's one thing we don't really think about because, ransomware attack, it's just going to affect the company or, maybe it'll affect a localized group like during the 2016 elections, whatever, cyber attacks on voting institutions and whatnot. But then you don't really realize just how vulnerable everything is. I mean, especially with Real ID, I've talked with people before on the show about that, how that is with that database, how easily accessed it is.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, everything that's important to us, our infrastructure, our personal data, our medical data, our financial transactions are all run by the internet, right? So if there is if you're connected to the internet, you are vulnerable. And unfortunately, security hasn't really kept up with the level of attacks. And the internet is now, of course, over 50 years old. And like anything that's over 50 years old, the vulnerabilities are well known. Wealth companies do update software constantly. You know, those that seek to steal that data or disrupt corporations are certainly keeping well ahead of the security levels that we apply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember might have been one of my computer science classes from college where I was told that the internet was not really designed for use the way it is right now. It's designed where you trust the person you're connecting with, and that's part of how all these vulnerabilities happen. And as you said, now we're 50 years on from building that trustworthy environment, everybody knows how to exploit it.
They certainly do, and AI is just adding to that. You know, before, if your boss called you, told you to wire $20,000 to this customer or client or what have you, you might trust that. But today, these guys are doing is they are sampling voices that they pick up from YouTube videos or from the internet, recreating that voice, and then having that artificial voice make a phone call to trigger a transaction. And the problem, again, is like you said, it's trust. You used to be able to trust what you could hear and you could see, but today you can't do that.
Yeah, and that's an even worse component because some of them spam calls that you get, if you have a work phone, you don't know who that number is. It could be a customer. You have to answer that phone. And even if you just say so much as hello, that is a voice sample, is it not?
It is, yeah. And look, I mean, even if you don't put anything out at work on your work videos, on your social media, there's a good chance that you're talking in videos, whether they're on TikTok or Instagram or X or whatever it is. And they can use that now as sampling and compile basically a digital version of you, whether it's a video likeness or your voice, and then they can use that to trigger transactions within your company.
On that terrifying note about identity theft, we've got about 40 seconds left here. Tell us about SAT123.
Well, at SAT123.com, we provide alternatives to standard infrastructure communications, so satellite communications, satellite internet, especially. You know, satellite phones work when cell towers go down, when the power grid goes down. Satellite internet does the same thing. And we offer free satellite phones with activation. We're the only ones in the country to do that. These handsets typically cost $1,000 or more, but at sat123.com, you can get them for free. And that means that you'll be able to stay in communication regardless of what's going on with the power grid or in your local area.
All right, Chris Orr, appreciate you being on the Silker Joe Show. And listeners can go check that out. We're coming to a break, but we got more Silker Joe Show after that.
Obesity affects more than 40% of American adults, yet too often people are left without access to the support they need due to high costs, outdated one-size-fits-all treatments, or long wait times to see a specialist. Obesity medicine specialist and the head of weight loss at Hims & Hers, Dr. Craig Premack, explains.
The average wait time to see an obesity specialist in the U.S. is about 5 months. Through Hims & Hers, customers typically have their intake reviewed by a licensed provider in about 3 hours. A new analysis shows that customers accessing personalized GLP-1 treatment plans through Hims & Hers lost an average of 20 pounds, or 10% of their body weight, in 6 months. 75% of customers stayed on treatment after 6 months, far exceeding typical dropout rates. With a personalized approach and support across nutrition, movement, and mental health, and 24/7 access to a dedicated care team, the result is a comprehensive care experience that helps people succeed and build healthier lives for the long term.
To get started, visit forhers.com or hims.com.
While the number of highway rail crossing collisions, deaths, and injuries have dropped over the past 5 decades, every 3 hours in the U.S., a person or vehicle is involved in a train collision. September 15th to 21st is National SeaTrax Think Train Week. John Fleps, Norfolk Southern Chief Safety Officer.
Every safe choice around train tracks is a powerful one. This week shines a spotlight on the importance of staying alert and making smart decisions near train tracks. Trains are faster and quieter than most people realize, and they can take more than a mile to come to a complete stop. That's why it's critical to stay off tracks unless you're at a designated crossing. At crossings, always look and listen for trains and make sure you have a clear view in both directions before proceeding. Safety is a core value and the foundation of everything we do at Norfolk Southern, but safety isn't just our responsibility, it is everyone's. You have more power than the train to stop a crash before it happens by always making safe choices around tracks.
Visit norfolksouthern.com/railsafety to learn more.
As students settle into the new school year, experts warn about a danger that's often overlooked: human trafficking. While many think it only happens abroad, trafficking can happen in any community, and young people are especially vulnerable during times of transition, like the start of school. Erica Reed with the Department of Homeland Security's Blue Campaign says adults need to know the signs.
Traffickers often build trust by posing as a mentor or friends. Any sudden change in behavior, like isolation or secretive relationships, can be a warning sign.
But knowing the signs is only part of the solution. Reed says starting a conversation early can make all the difference.
It's important to know that just a simple check-in with the young people in your life can open the doors to trust, and that simple act can prevent exploitation before it ever begins. Be the adult that notices.
To learn how to recognize the signs and help protect students this school year, visit dhs.gov/bluecampaign.
Psst, Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here this weekend. So, talking now about, I was starting to get into in the opening segment, about when it comes to violence, Democrats just keep harping on January 6th as their blank check for mayhem. We have this attorney general candidate in the state of Virginia, Democrat attorney general candidate. He said he wanted to shoot the state Republican House, or the state House majority leader. That is the leader of the Virginia has a House of Representatives in the state at the state level, and it has its own House Speaker. And when right now it's a convicted felon. Democrats love to refer to Trump as a convicted felon as if that's disqualifying somehow. Well, guess what? They called it a heroic act for civil rights and criminal justice reform and whatever when Democrats appointed a convicted felon to lead the Virginia State House of Representatives. But anyway, it was a Republican at one point three years ago, and That, well, was it 3 years ago or was it just on the occasion of the Republicans passing? But either way, the Democrat Attorney General candidate for the state of Virginia today, Jay Jones, 3 years ago, he admitted in text messages he wanted to put a bullet in the guy's head, and he wanted the guy's children to be killed by gun violence so that he could see his wife grieve and mourn and possibly get it in her head to advocate for gun bans and banning the Second Amendment like this radical leftist attorney general wants to do, attorney general candidate wants to do. So when it comes to extreme violence like that, and just the assassination culture that's gripped the Democrat Party these days, that's why I said in the opening segment, he shouldn't have ran away from these texts, he should have embraced them, because that's where half his party is at right now. What was it, 55% of Democrats thought assassinating Trump would be okay? And how many of them were out there dancing in the streets when Charlie Kirk was assassinated? Like, it's one thing, you know, if someone dies of natural causes or whatever, or, you know, it's just their time, or if it's just some random instance of murder, you know, maybe it's okay in those situations because you don't like the guy's politics or whatever. But when it's your side who killed him, no, you don't dance in the streets, you don't celebrate, because that's an assassination and you're justifying it. There's a line between random murder and death, natural causes, and assassination. So Democrats have crossed that line. And now you have this attorney general candidate who, the best he could do is say, oh, I was disgusted by what I said. But he's talking like he didn't actually say those things and like it wasn't only 3 years ago that he said those things. I can stand by just about anything I said 3 years ago. I can stand by anything I said 3 years ago, given the information I had at the time. I can certainly stand by anything I said 3 years ago. This guy definitely had information 3 years ago that maybe calling for killing people and wanting to watch the parents of their kids crying after the kids are killed, that maybe you shouldn't be saying these things. Maybe it makes you a bad person if you express these thoughts. But no, he 3 years ago decided that that was okay. This was acceptable. And Democrats, again, what's their justification? Oh, well, January 6th. You know, that's the best that they can do. Therefore, all violence by Democrats is justified. They can't point to any link, by the way, between Trump and the riot. They can't point to any quote he gave calling for violence. All they have are their claims about dog whistles. We have exact quotes calling for violence. We're talking about this guy's text messages. You can hardly get any more accurate than that unless you actually have the audio of him saying these things. I mean, it's basically a transcript of his thoughts, but all they have are dog whistles. Well, you know, funny thing about dog whistles, there's a reason they're not allowed as evidence in court. There's a reason why when mobsters speak in code and innuendo, you can't bust them. It's because their dialogue is perfectly innocent and depends solely on proving that both sides knew what was being discussed. When it comes to these dog whistles, Democrats have a very self-centered view on it. They believe these are dog whistles. Therefore, Trump supporters must believe it too. How can anyone deny it because Democrats believe it so strongly? Faith moves mountains, I suppose. So because their cult leader had a fever dream that certain words must mean what they don't mean, logically all Trump supporters somehow achieved the same understanding of Trump's words that the paranoid schizophrenics off their lithium in the Democrat Party also reached. That's just as skewed as their logic is behind why they say Trump called for violence on January 6th when they can't actually find him calling for any kind of violence. In fact, they find him calling for the opposite. But on Democrat planet, when Trump says one thing, he means another. Really, he means just whatever Democrats want him to mean in that exact moment. Words don't matter. Intent doesn't matter. Nothing matters with them. Whereas we have this Democrat's words and his intent. And all he can do is say, oh, I'm disgusted by what I did, that I'm not going to say how I changed between now and when I did it, but I assure you I'm disgusted by it and won't at all be as partisan in my reign of terror as attorney general. And it's all justified by January 6th anyway. That's where all the political violence came from. And somehow Trump as well, even though he never really called for violence except on a few occasions, but that were always accompanied by violence against his supporters. We can trace this all the way back to 2016, where leftists were beating up Trump supporters in the street while police stood around and did nothing. that happened. Los Angeles, famously, and Chicago as well. All that happened. Trump supporters were attacked. Then we have, after Trump wins, Democrats riot on election night when Hillary lost. At full-blown riots in the cities. Then they have riots all over the place during Trump's first term. You have college professors attacking pro-Trump people that are there to watch some pro-Trump speaker speak at a college. Professor comes out and joins a mob and attacks. That's where Democrats were in 2017. Of course, they've gotten more violent since then, which is why I figure that this Attorney General candidate, Jay Jones, why he should just lean into his text at this point, because that's where the party's at right now. They've been violent this whole time. And it's like they spent all of Trump's first term rioting and attacking, calling for violence, demanding violence, and saying Trump is such a threat to democracy that he's worth being violent against. And then finally, in 2020, they're out there in the streets causing $2 billion in damage, killing 25 people, seceding from the United States in one case. Like, they burned down a police station. Democrats burned down a police station, seized several blocks of Seattle, seceded from the country, proceeded to rob, rape, and murder people within their area of control, blocking police from enforcing the law and protecting people. And the governor called it, Democrats called it Summer of Love, block party atmosphere. Those are the exact quotes for what they said about the rob, rape, and murder that was going on. And secession from the U.S. as well, actual insurrection. And furthermore, elsewhere in the country, Republicans were being chased out of state capitals by violent rioters. Democrat rioters were attacking federal buildings. Pretty nationwide insurrection. They just about stormed the White House. And the media spun that as being Trump calling in the National Guard to clear the streets for a photo op in D.C. No, what happened is those rioters were about to storm the flipping White House. And the National Guard was called to stop them. And then Trump made a stand outside to show, law and order exists in this country. But not with Democrats, apparently. So they spent 4 years rioting, being violent, murdering Trump supporters, attacking Trump supporters, attacking Republican congressmen. There was the baseball shooting where a Bernie Sanders supporter grabbed a rifle and shot Republican congressmen that were practicing for the joint congressional baseball game. And Democrats, I saw that on MSNBC. They justified the shooting. So we have that for 4 years. Just that. Violence, violence, violence. And then January 6th comes. And for once, even though we now know that there were over 200 federal agents in the crowd that day, which we kind of knew already, there was that New York Times Pulitzer Prize winning reporter who admitted that there were so many law enforcement, who admitted to Project Veritas, so hidden camera stuff, he didn't think he was being recorded, admitted that there was so much law enforcement in the crowd that reporters said were just stupid for thinking that they were in danger and they're grandstanding to believe so. And then, of course, Ocasio-Cortez, congresswoman out of New York, talked about how she almost died that day. She knew an hour before the attack, apparently, that it was going to happen, because that's when she started sheltering. But anyway, all that was going on, and January 6th happens, and even though there's such a high federal presence, it's the best Democrats had, and suddenly all violence by Democrats became justified because conservatives got violent. Democrats spent 4 years being violent in order to try and provoke the right, to give them that exact reaction they needed to clamp down on the right. That's it. That's all it was. It was a game of, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you. Oh, you hit me, now I'm going to tell mom. That's what it is. And that's how the Democrats justify their violence. They got that one event. Republicans can point to countless events that Democrats justified or ignored, and before January 6th, mind you. No problem. We can point to a lot of stuff. Democrats, they just got the one incident. But that's their blank check for mayhem. That's all they have. That's what they've been running on to justify this. And really, it's getting tired, I guess. No wonder their public opinion is turning against the party at this point. And it's only the radicals who are left, which is probably why they're getting more and more radical to begin with. Because people are leaving the party after seeing what a bunch of violent kooks they are. Anyway, we got more Silk or Joshua after this break, so stick with us.
So there's really three factors that come into play that says exactly why mid-October is a great time to buy. So first, there's just more homes on the market this time of year. And so that means that buyers are going to have more options and more time to make their choices, and that they're going to see that sellers are more motivated to get out of the market and make a sale. Second, this is a time of year where there's less competition from other buyers. So there's just fewer buyers in the market, and that's going to mean that buyers are going to notice that, you know, there's less people to compete with. And then third, prices actually come down this time of year relative to other times of year too. So there's really a lot of savings to be had if you're a buyer who's fortunate enough to be in the market right now. And then get connected with a realtor on realtor.com. This is someone who knows your market inside and out, is going to be able to help you to guide your home search from start to finish. So for more information, you can go to realtor.com either through our app or our website. And if you really want to know more about why this is such a great time to buy, go to realtor.com/besttimetobuy.
Hi, I'm Christina Daves. I'm a lifestyle expert with some tailgate tips for you. So my go-to drink this tailgate season is Carbliss, premium cocktails in a can. They have delicious flavors like pineapple and watermelon, and it's a woman and veteran-owned business. You want to stay hydrated and healthy on game day? So these are Sierra packets. They come from the Vitamin Shop, the leading destination for lifelong wellness solutions. You have electrolytes, and then you have your greens that are organic fruits and vegetables, probiotics, and fiber, so you feel great all day. And then you want to take your drinks. You make them at home. This is an insulated flask from High Camp Flask. This is a Firefight version. It has two tumblers attached to it with a magnet, and these can be customized as well. So to get more tips like this, please go to my website at ChristinaDaves.com.
The Medicare annual enrollment period runs each year from October 15th through December 7th, and it's an important time of year for the millions of Americans who already enjoy Medicare coverage. It's their chance to compare plan options for 2026. We know that Medicare coverage can be confusing. One thing I recommend to help navigate through the process is really focus on two things: cost and coverage. For cost, you want to consider things like the plan's premium, deductibles, copay or coinsurance. And for coverage, you should look not only at the medical coverage, things like hospital and doctor visits, but also prescription drug coverage and any extra benefits. The annual enrollment period runs from October 15th through December 7th. It's a great time to compare those cost and coverage of the plans available. Lots of options to consider for your Medicare choices in 2026. To help you navigate, I would recommend starting with a visit to MedicareEducation.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year, remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with y'all today. Thank you very much for sticking with us through this hour of the program. And we are wrapping it up now with more shutdown talk, but God, we're taping this early. I really hope the shutdown, well, I was about to say I hope the shutdown is still ongoing when this airs, but really no, because that'd be too long. But anyway, we're joined for the segment by Brian Reisinger. He is an award-winning columnist and consultant. Reisinger worked with his father on his farm from the time he could walk before entering the worlds of business journalism and public policy. His work has appeared in outlets such as USA Today, Real Clear Politics, and The Hill. He is author of Land Rich, Cash Poor, My Family's Hope, and The Untold History of the Disappearing American Farmer. Brian Reisinger, happy to be on the show. How are you today?
Hey, it's good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yep, glad to have you. So during this shutdown, the Trump administration, they were getting ready to roll out from the Office of Management and Budget between $12 and $13 billion from an internal USDA account, some of which could have been used to bail out farmers who were affected by Trump's tariffs. But that all got sidelined by the shutdown. What's going on with this?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's the deal. You know, we had a situation where everybody knew there was going to be some short-term pain for farmers, and the hope was that we'd be able to make China and others get in line after some tougher negotiations. Still working through that. And China is targeting the American farmer. So the Trump administration said, hey, if this is the situation unfolding and it's affecting our farmers, we should have a package of support to do something about that in the short term. And now the shutdown has completely derailed that. So I think the Trump administration seems like they're still working through how to get support to our farmers and deal with the fact that the Chinese snub during this trade dispute is affecting them. But that shutdown, you know, this congressional squabbling is a huge barrier to being able to do what we need to do for our farmers that are trying to help us move forward.
Yeah, it's just sort of the perfect storm right here between the tariffs and the shutdowns. I mean, are farmers usually affected by a government shutdown?
You know, it is. There's an impact in smaller ways usually, and what I mean by that is, you know, look, there are government offices that deal with farmers coming and saying, hey, here's what I'm doing my land. You know, different requirements farmers have to come in and say, here's what they're doing for crops, this and that. Those kinds of offices shut down during a shutdown. There are different programs for conservation and other things that get hobbled by a shutdown. So those things affect things in the sense that farmers are required to go do things and they can't stop by the county office that they need to do that. That has an impact. That's important. But in general, it's a smaller impact, and farmers are just kind of throwing up their hands saying, you know, hey, why can't Congress get this figured out? Why are the Democrats throwing up this issue, or why is the Republicans this, that? The farmers are just frustrated by it generally, like anybody is frustrated. But this issue of this tariff package getting held up by the government shutdown is on a whole new level, not just some offices closed, not just some what are they doing up there in Washington, but a big impact right now during the crucial fall harvest.
Now, is there any way that they could, with whatever few staff is in there, ram this through real quick? Or is it just this goes on as long as the shutdown goes on?
Yeah, because it has to do with the president's plans for a tariff package, and because there's a need for the administration to be able to roll that out, have congressional support for it, this really is about Congress doing its basic job. Is Congress there to be able to pass legislation, move things forward? And they can't right now because they're fighting over the shutdown, number one. And number two, the offices that would be needed if they do pass legislation are also shut down. So this shutdown is really a big and uniquely difficult barrier for the American farmer right now, in addition to ways that it affects all the American people.
Yeah, it's definitely got a unique characteristic to it from previous shutdowns, which, you know, again, the average American out there, it seems to only really impact federal workers. But just so happens the circumstances now are such that farmers are much more impacted. Now, how long can they last? I mean, they're already hurting, but is there like a certain amount they can last, or is it already one day too many?
Yeah, it's a great question. You're describing the dynamic exactly right. What I would say is that, you know, the shutdown situation needs to get figured out here before the fall harvest is over, because when we hit the end of that fall harvest, farmers have been harvesting soybeans, for example, for the last couple of weeks, and that continue depending on part of the country they're in. They've been doing some kinds of corn. They're going to be doing more corn harvest here throughout October into November. So if the shutdown outlasts the harvest season, that means not only do we have the trade dispute affecting things, and we want to make sure China gets in line, right? And that's what folks are working on. But not only do we have that, but then we have the shutdown keeping the aid related to those trade disputes. So we really shouldn't get through this harvest with both the trade dispute and the shutdown continuing to occur at the same time. That would be a very, very bad situation for our family farms all across America. Mm.
So then what would the timeline be for that? Because I have no idea what a fall harvest looks like.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example. So our farm, our family farm, we do a range of things. We've got some traditional crops that we've grown for a long time that we've got to continue for the time being. We're also trying to transition to new things. So we raise, my dad is still farming. My sister's working to take it over. We raise corn and soybeans, and those are traditional crops. And then we're also raising beef for consumers and pasture chickens and always experimenting with, different specialty crops, new things we can do for people who care about where their food comes from, right? So corn and soybeans is only part of what we do. We do other things. But the corn and soybeans part, you know, we've been working on harvesting soybeans, and we're going to be doing corn here throughout October. It's possible that corn could be done by early to mid-November, so, you know, in a month or less. So that means that the shutdown combination with the trade issues has to be resolved in the next couple of weeks. We can't let it continue past early and mid-November, or you've got farmers that are locking in losses from soybeans and corn and other things being affected by the trade dispute, and there's no support from the government that the Trump administration is trying to move forward.
Hmm. And the longest shutdown we have so far is a 35-day shutdown, which fortunately I think that was during Trump's first term, so there is precedent for us expecting that, and that would go, you know, based on when it started, that would go right on up to November 5th, I think. So yeah, if we stuck with that timeline, so that would be really, really cutting it way too close for comfort.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we got to hope that, you know, folks in Congress can set aside some of the political stuff and figure out some solutions for the American people. And as you said, I mean, a lot of times a shutdown mainly affects federal workers, and a lot of people, maybe they think Congress ought to get their act together, but they don't necessarily see the impact day to day. This one's different because of the situation involving our farmers, because it affects our farms, but also when our farmers are affected, that affects things like the price and availability and health of our food. So things that affect the American family farm do affect the American family dinner table, and I just hope we don't get to that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brian Reisinger, appreciate you being on the Silk Road Joe Show today to talk about this. We got very little time left. Where can our listeners find out more about Land Rich, Cash Poor, My Family's Hope, and the Untold History of the Disappearing American Farmer?
Absolutely. The new paperback edition of Land Rich, Cash Poor is now out this past month. You can find it on Amazon and online and in independent bookstores nationwide.
All right, listeners, you can go check that out. I want to thank Brian Reisinger for being on the program. And listeners, our website is mainstreetradionetwork.com. That's something else for you to check out, because we are done with you for this day. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.